This is with Donna Marie Doherty on Highland Radio. The kids are in charge to explore all things sustainable. Ours to Protect is funded by Commission Amman with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Highland Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland.
Good evening, it's Donna Marie Doherty and this is Ours to Protect. We have a jam-packed programme coming up this evening all about food waste, and let's dive straight in with maybe the most simple way we can reduce our food waste.
I think you should put the amount of food that you're going to eat first, because you can always get more, because some countries that are poor don't have that much food.
That point brings us to our first guest, Patsy Toland, who's a founding member of Changemakers. Patsy was speaking at the organisation's annual seminar about food, and I got catching up with him later, and he told me about how the country's potato seed is actually grown here in Donegal, and how that later went out to help in a famine in Ethiopia.
I came across it first, I suppose, when I lived in Clonmany. We had a business there, and part of the business was a potato business, a seed potato business. And what used to happen, I didn't quite understand it at the time, but we used to go out during the year to different potato growers around the place and give them special bags and all the rest. And these potatoes would be grown as seed potatoes. So they were registered seeds. So they were very specific. They had to be kept disease-free and inspected and all the rest, you know. And then I found out, of course, that the reason that it was so important here is that the further north you go in Ireland and up onto Scotland, we are free, our soil is free, and potatoes grow without a thing called eelworm or another one called cyst nematode, a wee worm. And our soil is predominantly free from these. So we can grow disease-free potatoes in North Donegal, and in particular around the area of Newton Cunningham and Burton, places like that. It's really one of the most important seed potato growing areas in the country. And out of that as well, or I suppose as part of that, in Rafoe itself is the centre of our national potato growing industry. It's laboratories and growing areas and polytunnels and all that grow the tiny little seeds from potato flowers that then become tiny little tubers. And those tubers then are sent out to registered growers with good land, who then grow them on to what's called seed potatoes. And that's what you buy then. If you want to really get good spuds, you go to someone who grows seed potatoes, you buy them, and they are disease-free, so you're starting with something very important. And the other really interesting thing about the laboratories and Rafoe and all is that, you know, today we hear a lot about climate change and biodiversity and what's going to happen, and we're all sort of concerned about making sure we keep our natural flora and fauna and all those flowers and all those things that grow here, that we need them as part of, you know, to fight sort of biodiversity loss. And one of the things that the centre, it's called the TOPS, T-O-P-S Centre, Potato Centre in Rafoe, they keep our national collection of potatoes. There's nearly 700 varieties of potatoes that this place keeps and keeps safe and grows and makes sure that they're always available in a sort of virus-free and disease-free way, so that, you know, if climate change affects our climate badly and some of the potatoes we grow now, you know, like everybody goes out and buys their records and they buy their queens and things like that. If they start not to grow so well or to be under threat from a virus or a disease, we will have the sort of the TOPS will work on the other varieties, possibly 700, that then perhaps can become part of our spud growing culture, which is very important, you know.
It's interesting whenever we speak about food in terms of sustainability. You know, we often hear about avoiding single-use plastic and things for like sandwiches or that type of thing. But thinking about the carbon footprint behind what goes on your plate, you're able to get these. They start off in Rafoe, which for many people will be on their doorstep.
Absolutely. I mean, I know Rafo won't sell you direct. Rafo will sell to the registered growers around. There's a fellow called Jerry Doherty, one of the biggest growers in the county too. You'll go to one of those guys, and possibly not even to him, but to, you know, your local co-op or something like that, who will have these spuds, these seed potatoes that you can avail of as well. So yeah, we are actually, in terms of carbon footprint, doing really well.
And here's how our seed ended up helping people in need.
In 1984, when we all heard about the famine, and isn't it funny, in the sort of changing world, then we all responded, and the world responded amazingly, and we did try to help. And one group of people who thought they knew what the problem was, that was farmers in Ireland. So the IFA, the Irish Farmers Association, with the help of a small organisation that started down in Carlow called Self Help Africa, they got together and they reckoned that we need to replace some of the and complement some of the food crops that are there with ones that we know most about and perhaps would suit them. So that was potatoes. So the Self Help Africa came to the Irish Potato Marketing Board, and they ended up with the IFA getting 2,000 tons of seed potatoes grown in Donegal. And they were exported on a boat that left the quays in Derry and sailed off to Ethiopia. And now in Ethiopia, if you go there and you're offered food to eat, you'll get lots of food, but you'll always be offered the Irish potato. And it's still called that across not just Ethiopia, but many East African countries now. And it's a very important part of the diet as well. So we can be sort of very proud of that Donegal spuds and Donegal seed potatoes helped the development after the famine, to help a lot of farmers to get back onto their feet again.
Sometimes it can be our friends and our neighbours who've fallen on hard times, and this is when groups like the Clonmany Food Pantry come into play. Bathing Mullins is the manager of the Clonmany Community Centre, and she told me how the idea for this started off with some very, very clever after-schoolers.
So the Community Pantry is it's actually a project that we've been working on since 2018, and it's evolved naturally. It started really when we became aware of a national social enterprise called Food Cloud. And Food Cloud are an organisation that link charities up with retailers to help redistribute surplus food. So when we became aware of them, we thought it would be a great idea to link with them and avail of some of the surplus food items in the supermarkets locally that we could bring back to the community centre and basically, you know, maybe introduce to the after school children for their lunches, and to kind of open up a discussion about food waste and surplus food items to try and educate them about where it comes from and how it comes about. And I suppose that was the basic principle for how we got linked in with Food Cloud and how the project really began. And it was the children who kind of really started the ball rolling in terms of, you know, bringing the food items to the rest of the community. One of the weeks we came home with like 100 boxes of eggs. The children had said, well, why don't we like give them to the people coming out of the gym? We thought, jeekers, that's a great idea. So the children actually put up posters that they designed themselves, and they set up a table out in the hallway, and they started talking to everybody coming in and out of the gym about food waste and surplus food and how the eggs were full of protein and blah, blah, blah. And it actually became a really interesting and exciting project then for the children. Obviously in 2020 then, COVID hit. Uh-huh. And the Food Cloud had got in contact and said, do you still want to receive your food items? And although a majority of our services had closed down at that point, we still were mindful that we had a role to play within our own community. And we decided we'd continue with the food collections and the redistribution. And we decided what we would do is we would do it in the form of something that was going to lift the spirits of the community and something that was like positive and uplifting. But we also had to think of, well, what could we do within our 5K radius? So we thought, well, maybe we could try and encourage people to, when they're out on their daily walks, that maybe they would come down and they would see what was in the community pantry box. So we set up a box at the front of the building, and we used to fill it with loads of different items that we had donated, like pasta, lots of dried goods, crackers, things like that. And then we actually have a tuck shop within the community centre, so we decided that we would take a lot of the sweets and crisps and Coke and stuff like that out of there, because obviously we couldn't sell them anymore, and we would put them in like for Friday night treats. And lots of families said it was like the highlight of their week was coming to see what was in the community pantry box. So I suppose then we took it to the next step, and we decided this has had such a positive impact, and it actually has started naturally generating a conversation around food waste and surplus food items. And it was breaking down barriers in terms of people feeling a little awkward about using items past its best before date, and people were having an open conversation about where it came from, and it was brilliant. So we decided we would set it up as an actual standalone unit, and I suppose that's how it began.
I suppose now, how does the community pantry look today if somebody wanted to be involved in it? So it's had quite the evolution.
It absolutely has had an evolution. It's a really fantastic tried and tested model. So we have like a membership system, and you can come and you can take out a membership, and we have bags with our logo. We have a logo and everything for it. And you come and you fill your bag and you pay your weekly fee for your bag, and you take as many items as you can get into that bag away home with you. And this model has been incredibly successful. What it's meant is that just through the memberships and the weekly fee for the bag fills, it's meant that it's actually become a project that's sustainable. It's not actually generating, like, it's not a profit-making thing. It is a sustainable project, which is brilliant. You know, it's meant that we've been able to employ one or two people working within it. And we've also had other organisations who were operating food banks during, you know, COVID and that, who are really interested in transferring over to our model. So, for example, the Exchange in Buncrana, they have transitioned now from a food bank to Buncrana Community Pantry. And so with that, I suppose that was our first step at developing a community pantry network. So going forward, that's what we are working on at the minute. It's the development of a community pantry network around Inishowen. And if we can get that model up and running smoothly, we would intend that we could maybe bring it to other counties.
So to really put this into perspective, every single item that is in that pantry would have ended up in landfill.
Absolutely. Like, I tell a story where I remember coming home from a supermarket with €350 worth of legs of lamb.
Oh my goodness.
And each leg of lamb was between 25 and 30 euros a leg. And to me, that was shocking, even when you think about the whole impact that it has on the farming industry.
Yeah.
You know, farmers put so much work into getting their high-class product to the end of line. And if I had have said no, I didn't need that collection, it would have ended up in the skip.
One TY student I was speaking to had a question about redistribution in particular.
How can young people get involved in community initiatives focused on food recovery and redistribution?
I think it's really remarkable how interested young people are. Recently, I was invited to the community school in Carndonagh, and I was asked to give a talk to some of the students there in fifth year. And part of the talk was about the community pantry, and I had actually brought in a bag filled with produce, and they were super, super interested. And in fact, when I left the classroom and I was leaving, the children who were moving classes seen the bag and recognised it and came running up to ask, did I have anything that they could have out of the pantry? So to me, I thought, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
You guys are like 16, 17. And yous are interested and supportive of this project. And it's like, you believe in what it is that we're doing and the message that we're putting out. And you're part of that too, which is fantastic. But going forward, some of our plans as well are to be running some team programs for any young people who are interested in coming up with ideas for, you know, repurposing food waste. Yeah. So in terms of, you know, creating freeze-dried produce and repackaging food or reusing food in different ways. So we will be running teen programs now for any young people who are interested in that. It opens loads of doors and loads of different possibilities, even for, say, now we've had volunteers. So during COVID, we had volunteers that were working with us on the Community Pantry project. One of those volunteers has gone on now to be a nutritionist. It's really interesting for her now, looking back on the project, to see, you know, what impact our project is having, and even to look at the nutritional value of the food that's coming into the pantry. We had another volunteer who actually went on to Galway University, and between ourselves and himself, we were able to develop a student pantry in Galway University. So that was the first student pantry in Ireland, and it's absolutely flying. So Adam is still currently assisting in the community, the student pantry down in Galway University, which is a great successful story.
When I was talking to children about food, they were particularly interested in food growing.
My granny has a greenhouse.
Oh, what does she do growing that?
Strawberries, cabbages and turnips.
Do you help her out with it? Do you do any growing in it?
We have to use like a spade to like dig up the soil.
Is that to put the seeds into it or is it?
Yeah, you put the seeds in and then you cover it over and then it grows.
Well, I'm growing tomatoes. I'm growing beanstalks and squash.
Is it hard to grow them, or what did you just have to do?
No, we just have to put like water and soil.
There you go, just soil and water to grow bean sprouts. When it comes to growing food, there's no better woman than to speak to than Joanne Butler, who's the founder of Organic Gardens.
So some of the things that we do, and, you know, I'm conscious that I'm a gardener, I'm a grower, but a lot of the things you don't need to be a grower for to avoid food waste. And in your kitchen especially, you can compost your food. You can separate your food waste just by having a little compost bin at the side of your sink, and that any of your non-cooked, really kind of fresh food can go into that. That maybe your scraps from cutting the vegetables and things like that can go in, but also the tops of carrots and stuff like that that maybe you're not using anyway. And if you don't make carrot top pesto, which is a delicious recipe, I would urge anyone to look at. But if you're got your little compost bin there, and I know kind of in the more urban areas, they now have the brown bins that you can put that waste into. But really for us, the important thing of that bin is that we compost it then. We have a 3-bay composting bin in the garden. We've actually got a number of them now around the garden. And then we turn from bay one into bay two around midsummer. So we gather up all the kitchen scraps, but we also gather wood and paper as well. And we mix it all together, turn it into bay two, and then bay three, it gets turned into, so that the following springtime, we've got this beautiful compost. And I've even got some here with me. I know you can't see it on the radio, but it's just such a beautiful, you know, it's a lovely, healthy compost full of worms, full of microorganisms. And we put that back out into our garden and it helps us grow the following year. The other thing that we do, I think on a more practical basis, is that we make a food. We make a calendar or a, you know, what we're going to be eating throughout the week. And I think that that really does avoid overconsumption in the supermarket, which can be done very easily. And we do up a list. It's just what we're going to have for dinner mostly. You could do the breakfast, lunch and the and maybe your snacks in between as well, but I just do it for the dinners. And the twist that I have at home here is that I try to make those dinners seasonal, so that we look to the garden first before the supermarket. And we grow vegetables in the annual vegetable beds, but we also have perennials popping up in the flower borders, like fennel and artichokes and things like that. So you really kind of don't know what's out there unless you go looking. So I would go and have a wee walk around the garden and then come up and do the calendar or the food list of what we need then in the supermarket. And I think that really avoids the you know, overbuying, buying too much, which then ultimately can be thrown out there.
Mm. Especially whenever it comes to vegetables, you can sometimes, I'd say I'm guilty of it myself, being I'm going to eat so healthy this week, you buy in a load of salad, spinach, carrots, you name it, and then it ends up rotten, and because you don't get through it all for one, and then it's also all wrapped in plastic and the rest of it, and it's usually shipped in from abroad.
Yeah, that's it. And that brings me perfectly to my third thing that I'm going to talk about, and that is to grow your own salads. And I know, Donna Marie, if you are a busy woman or a man and you're working away and you're kind of going, I want to eat healthy, a new hack that I've learned in the last couple of years is to grow microgreens. I don't even need a garden. All I use is little trays. You can buy the seeds specifically for a microgreen mix if you want. So these ones here, they're just brassica microgreens. A packet of them will the packet of seeds will last me 2-3 years if I look after it properly. And I simply just grab a handful onto a little tray of soil in the kitchen. Just put a little mat under it so it catches any water. And I just sprinkled the seeds on top of that. And within 2 weeks, I'm literally eating. And I'm eating the microgreens, which I can also send you a photograph of.
Oh, wow.
And I have that. And I tell you, it's just such a game changer, because if you are eating healthy, you can throw it into your smoothies. You can cook with it. Here I've got the microgreen pea shoots, and we have it in our salads. And it's just so, so tasty and so good for you. You don't need a garden. You don't need very much experience. And the left, once you do a couple, you could actually get 1 or 2 cuts of the microgreens, and then you could throw that all into the compost bin, and then you start again. If you're like me, you can actually get into a little a kind of timeline that you're when you're eating your microgreens, you're actually getting ready to sow your second seeds trays, so that you're never missing out on when the greens are ready. The idea of that is that you're growing exactly what you need, and the, you know, the food waste then, if there is any, is minimal because it's going back into the compost bin.
That's great as well. It's pretty foolproof, and it's the kind of thing you could get everybody involved in it. You know, it's not going to be out in the garden trying to dig a plot. You know, it's quick and fun.
Fun as well, and you can do it on the windowsill. And when you've got visitors, and you know, the fun part is that you give them the pea shoots there, for example, or your spinach, or, you know, and you just get them to try it. And the flavour, you know, is so fresh that, you know, they might not have ever tried it that fresh, like literally coming off the plant. So that's the fun part. And the other fun part is that you could sneak it into all the dinner dishes as well, and the kids don't know. So you're getting one over on them as well.
And with that, so what kind of things would be in microgreens?
Well, you can get, like, the microgreens that I grow would be a brassica mix, which could be, brassicas are your cabbage family.
Okay.
So it could be anything from kale, kohlrabi, it could be any cabbages at all, mizuna, all of those kind of microgreens. You could get rocket, which you can get a spicy microgreen mix. You can also grow your chard, your spinach, all as microgreens. The pea shoots I've mentioned, and also you can grow your herbs too as microgreens. So can you imagine growing basil microgreens? If you're no good at growing basil, and if you've bought it in the supermarket, brought it home, and it's died on you, the microgreens might be your way forward, because you grow it on a little tray, and then you're literally picking off the little leaves, sprinkling it over some bruschetta.
And I suppose I just want to go back to the composting, because it's a question that we've gotten often, and that is, if you're composting, can you put the likes of dinner scraps into it, or I heard somebody asking, could they put their pizza crust into it, or how does that work?
Yeah, well, you can compost cooked food waste, but it's a different system that we use here. We use the bokashi bins, and we also use wormeries as well. So I would say, don't, if you're a beginner to composting, stick to the fresh food. And if you are starting your own compost bins, you know, and you've got the space, try a number of different ways. You can use the Darlik bins that you can buy in the shops, or you can make your own 1-bay, 2-bay or 3-bay compost bins. But the cooked food really is a different level, because you will be, if you put cooked food in there, you're probably, it's not the best way to be composting it anyway, because of the mix of nitrogen, carbon and all of that. But you probably want to kind of keep out the wee friends as well, and they will go looking for the cooked food. They'll smell it. They'll pick it up really quickly. So I use the bokashi bin, which is an anaerobic system. It's a closed kind of composting system. And I can send you a link for that as well if people want to look it up. And then the wormeries as well. So I bokashi compost my cooked food waste. And then when I'm finished the bokashi compost, I actually then put that bokashi compost in through my wormeries to get the air back into it. The worms love bokashi waste. And there's, you drain off the liquid. You have to do a few different steps, But that bokashi waste then goes into my wormery. And then when it comes through the body of the worm as such, mm-hmm. I have this lovely worm cast then that can go out into the garden. It's safe to go then. So it's a different level. But if you do find that that you've got lots of cooked food waste and you don't want to be throwing it out, it's well worth the look into.
Well, could that go into the brown bin?
The brown bin can take all of that, yeah.
Okay,
that brown bin food scraps are taken to an anaerobic digester anyway, as far as I'm aware. In Donegal, there's a number of anaerobic digesters. So that food waste goes and gets turned into compost, but in a very safe, controlled way. So that's, you can put anything, food waste, into the brown bins.
We talked there about the microgreens, how it's a good kind of segue into gardening. For people who would like to take on trying, I suppose, to grow in plots but don't know where to start, a community garden would be the best way to go about it. And this is something that you've, as you said, you've been working on it for years and you're a very strong advocate of.
Yes, totally. Community garden was my way into my community first. Mm-hmm. So I always talk about growing people first. And I think that it's such a wonderful thing to do. If you're only new to gardening, you can do a little bit of dabbling at home. But joining a community garden allows you to buddy up with people that are more experienced. You get to talk about food, and what's better than talking about food and plants all day, in my opinion. But you can join a community garden and you can find out what they're doing. You're supporting your local community as well. You're getting to know the people in your community. And also, if your community garden is doing organic practices, you're also helping the environment, and you are creating just a better place to be in your area.
And it's just like you said, there people who you usually find them in community gardens are always so excited to share what they've learned and share seeds and plants. So it's a great way to get stuck into it.
100%. Yeah, I love. We've over the years since the Donegal Community Garden Network has started, we've actually mapped almost 30 community gardens. So there's a community garden nearly in every area, and they do have their ebbs and flows. But if you kind of ask around, if you get in touch with your local development company, they'll be able to find that there's a community garden map there. We've also got a Facebook page and people can link onto that and they can find out where their local community garden is. And also there is a number of garden classes that are happening now as well. And like, we are putting on some garden classes as well over the summer that people, if they want a wee day out and come and actually be in the garden here, learn to grow the food and then get to eat the food, because that's the most important part of our day is that we cook a lovely lunch for everyone.
Yeah.
And they get to eat the food and they get to really experience what it's like. And it's that full cycle. Mm. You know, we look at the cycle with our food waste as in, you know, turning it back into soil, and then the soil feeds the plant and the plant feeds us. And, you know, in this day and age where we're stressed and the anxiety is out there and, you know, we just want to do something good for our environment, I think growing a garden is one of the best things that you can do. Growing a healthy garden without chemicals is one of the best things that you can do.
And Joanne, I suppose finally, is there any other wee tips and tricks that you could share with us?
Well, my final one would be, and it's not for everyone again, it's got to do with if you've got a wee bit of space, but we've got 6 chickens here at the house. And it was I think it was a COVID thing that we did, you know, whenever we were all looking for new projects, we got chickens. And I really think that they're the most fun thing they have in a small garden or a medium sized garden that you can have that basically look after your food waste. So we would give them the scraps from the house, the fresh scraps that aren't going into the compost bin. They would get them and they just eat away at them. And not only do you get lovely compost from the other end of the chicken, which we then put into our compost systems, but you get your fresh eggs as well. And sure, it's a lovely, symbiotic relationship that we have with the chickens, is that we feed them and they feed us.
Lovely. And this might be a bit of a ground question to ask, just whenever you said that, it came into my mind. Whenever you're saying that you put the chicken waste in there, could you do the same if you had any other animals, like the dogs or anything, or no?
No. Chicken, because we feed the chickens our vegetables from the garden waste, and we also feed them organic pellets. I know what they're getting. I'm never sure with our other animals, the dogs, what they're getting in their food. So I wouldn't put that. And then there's different different things in the dog poop that you wouldn't be putting under your compost system. So no, chicken waste, yes. And yeah, that would be the only thing really that I would add in. And it's a very good nitrogen, it's high nitrogen, so it's a very good activator for compost as well, where I wouldn't be sure about dog poop.
That's all we have time for today. Time has caught up on us. I'm going to leave you with the girls who told me how they compost in their school.
When we're ready eating the banana, we put them in like a sweet box that's ready, and then the teachers bring it out and put it in the compost.
So you just have that in your classroom?
Yeah, he used to go around the school and he'd knock on the door and be like, "Hi, can we have the compost bin?" And they'd empty out the compost. He'd bring like 2 liters with him. And like he'd empty out the compost bin and then away to the next room.
Then we got the sweet boxes, like heroes and all the stuff.
Them?
Yeah, we reuse them, so it's not wasting plastic.
And it's also not wasting food.
This is Super Set with Donna Marie Doherty on Highland Radio. The kids are in charge to explore all things sustainable. Ours to Protect is funded by Commission Amman with a television licence fee and is a partnership between Highland Radio and the Independent Broadcasters of Ireland.